A second chance. 6. While meditating on Brahman, the Mayavadi thinks, I have become God. In one sense, of course, it is correct to think, I'm one with God, for as spirit souls we are all one with God in quality. But no one can ever become quantitatively one with God. In the Bhagavad Gita, 15.7, Krishna declares that the living entities are part and parcel of me. Krishna is completely spiritual, Sachidananda. So each particle of spirit must also be Sachidananda, just as a gold earring is qualitatively one with the gold in a gold mine. Still, the gold earring is not the gold mine. So the Mayavadi's mistake is to think that the part can become equal to the whole. They presume that, because they are part and parcel of God, they are God. Therefore the Srimad Bhagavatam, October 2, 32, describes the impersonalists as avasadhibuddhaya. Their intelligence is impure, they are still in ignorance. Mayavadis believe that by accumulating knowledge they become one with God, and thus they address one another as Narayana. That is their great mistake. We cannot become Lord Narayana. Narayana is Vibhu, which means very big or infinite, whereas we are Anu, infinitesimal. Our spiritual magnitude measures 1/10,000th of the tip of her hair. Therefore, how can any sane man claim that he has become God? Sankaracharya gave a hint about Brahman, teaching everyone to think, Atam Brahmasmi, I'm the spirit self, not the material body. The Vedas agree. One who is situated in mukti, or liberation, understands perfectly, I'm not this body, I'm pure spirit soul. But that is not the end of self-realization. Next one has to ask, if I'm an eternal spirit soul, what is my eternal spiritual activity? That eternal activity is devotional service to Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, 18.54, Lord Krishna describes how Brahman realization leads to devotional service. Brahma Bhutaprasanatma Nasakadinakangsadi Samasarvisu Bhutisu Madbhaktam Labhutparam. One who is transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed toward every living entity. In that state he attains pure devotional service unto me. Often big Swamis talk about attaining Brahma in realization, but do not remove themselves from worldly pleasures and pains. They involve themselves in humanitarian activities, thinking, my fellow countrymen are suffering, let me open the hospital, or they are uneducated, let me open the school. If someone is really on the platform of Brahma Bhuta, why would he accept any particular place as his country? Actually, as spirit souls we do not belong to any country. We get a body, and as soon as the body is finished, the connection with a particular country is also finished. The symptom of lamentation reveals that the so-called liberated person has not been cured of his attachment to worldly pleasure and pain. That means he has not become joyful, because one who is joyful does not lament. So many learned synaesthetes have fallen down to material activities, because they have not in fact realized Brahman. It is not so easy. As already explained, the influence of the modes of nature is very strong. The living entity entangled in different types of fruitive activity is like a silkworm trapped in a cocoon. Getting free is very difficult, unless one is helped by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Spiritual senses. Real knowledge is attained by applying the senses in the service of Krishna. At present, our mind and senses are absorbed in bodily designations, such as I'm American, I'm Indian, or I'm English. In this consciousness we think that we should apply our senses in the service of our relatives, our society, our nation, etc. But these are temporary circumstances. Our real position is that we are Brahman, pure spirit soul. As long as we think of ourselves as belonging to some temporary designation, we cannot become a devotee of Krishna. As we have pointed out, Brahman realization is not the end of spiritual knowledge. There are three stages of self-realization: Brahman, or the realization that one is not this body, but the spirit soul; Paramatma realization, or understanding the Lord within the heart; and Bhagavan realization, realizing the Lord in his personal form as Sri Krishna. Beyond Brahman is Paramatma realization, realizing Krishna in the heart as Super Soul. Brahman is like the sunlight, but Paramatma realization is like seeing the sun globe itself, the source of the sun's rays. Going still further, one can enter into the spiritual planets of Vaikuntha and see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. This is the ultimate stage of self-realization, and is like meeting the Sangha himself. The sunlight, the sun globe, and the Sangha are one and inseparable, yet they are simultaneously different. The sunlight is the impersonal effulgence of the sun globe is its localized aspect, and the Sangha is the personal source of both the sun globe and the sunlight. In the Bhagavad Gita 4.27, Krishna confirms that he is the source of the Brahman effulgence, Brahmanohi Pratistham. I'm the basis of the impersonal Brahman. And in the Isipanisad 15, a devotee prays, Hiranmayena Patrina Satyasaya Pahitam Mukham Tattvam Pusana Pavranu Satya Dharmaya Draste. O my Lord, sustainer of all that lives, your real face is covered by your dazzling effulgence. Please remove that covering and exhibit yourself to your pure devotee. So Brahman realization is not enough. A sick man's fever may go down, but he may not yet be cured. He is finally cured when he is not only safe from fever, but fully recovered and back to his normal, active life. Otherwise there is danger of relapse. Likewise, understanding I'm a spirit soul, not a body, does not mean one is cured of illusion. Only when a person fully understands that he is the eternal servant of Krishna, and he acts on that understanding, is he truly self-realized. A special concession for all people in the present age. For all people the best path To achieve self-realization is to chant the Hare Krishna mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The conditioned souls in this age of Kali are so engrossed in sinful activities that it is impossible for them to follow the Vedic injunctions in a systematic way. The chanting of the Hare Krishna Mata mantra is the special concession of Sri Caitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna himself, who appeared 500 years ago, just to deliver the fallen souls, by inaugurating the Sankirtana movement, the movement of the congregational chanting of the Lord's holy names. Lord Caitanya would often quote the following verse from the brand Naradiya Purana, March 8, 126. Haranam, Haranam, Haranam eva kevalam, Kala nasti eva, nasti eva gadaranirtha. In this age, the only way to attain salvation is to chant the holy name, chant the holy name, chant the holy name of the Lord. There is no other way, no other way, no other way. We can see the power of chanting the holy name of Krishna by studying the Krishna consciousness movement. In this movement, all kinds of sinful activities are being given up by persons who have been addicted to bad habits ever since they were living in the wombs of their mothers. This is their good fortune. As Sri Caitanya Mahaprabhu says in the Caitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 19.151, Brahmanda Brahmite Gona Bajaya Vanjiva, Guru Krishna Prasad Payad Bhakti Lata Bijaya. The living entity is rotating in different lives and in different bodies, transmigrating from one situation to another throughout the universe. But if he is fortunate and gets the mercy of Krishna, he will get a bona fide spiritual master, from whom he will receive the seed of the creeper of bhakti, devotional service. If he is truly intelligent, he will sow that seed in his heart and water it. If you sow a seed in the earth, you must water it, so that it will fructify. Similarly, once the seed of bhakti has been sown in the heart, it has to be watered properly. What is that water? Sravanam Kirtanam, hearing and chanting the glories of Krishna, is the watering process that will make the seed of devotional service grow. By cultivating devotional service to Krishna, we can get out of our unfortunate position in the material world, which Krishna has certified in the Bhagavad Gita as Dukhalayam, the place full of miseries. In other words, by taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna in the shape of chanting and hearing his holy name, we will not have to undergo repeated birth and death in this miserable material world. Body of Desire. The Srimad Bhagavatam describes in detail how a conditioned living entity takes birth. According to his karma, the living entity is put into the semen of a particular father, and the living entity's gross material body is manifested from the union of father and mother. During sexual intercourse, the mentalities of the father and mother are combined when the father's semen and mother's egg mix, and this combination is acquired by the child. Each of us has a different type of body. No one's body is identical to anyone else's. The different types of bodies have a cause and that causes karma. According to one's previous activities, one develops a certain kind of subtle body made up of mind, intelligence, and false ego, and on the basis of the subtle body one gets a particular gross body. As Lord Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita, 8.6, Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam, tijati anti kalavaram, tam tam avadi kantya, satatat bhava bhavita. Whatever state of being one remembers, when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail. The character of the subtle body at the time of death is determined by the sum total of one's activities during one's lifetime. If a human being is taught to change his subtle body by developing Krishna consciousness, at the time of death his subtle body will create a gross body in which he will be a devotee of Krishna, or if he is still more advanced, he will not take another material body at all but will immediately get a spiritual body, and thus return home, back to Godhead. This is the perfection of human life. Chapter 12. Bewildered by desire, the Yamadutas continued, in the beginning this Brahmana named the Jamila studied all the Vedic literatures. He was a reservoir of good character, good conduct, and good qualities firmly established. In executing all the Vedic injunctions, he was very mild and gentle, and he kept his mind and senses under control. Furthermore, he was always truthful, he knew how to chant the Vedic mantras, and he was also very pure. Ajamila was very respectful to his spiritual master, the fire god, guests, and the elders of his household. Indeed, he was free from false prestige. He was upright, benevolent to all living entities, and well-behaved. He would never speak nonsense or envy anyone. Once Ajamila, following the order of his father, went to the forest to collect fruit, flowers, and two kinds of grass, called samet and kusa. On the way home he came upon a lusty fourth-class man, Sudra, shamelessly embracing and kissing a prostitute. The Sudra was smiling, singing, and enjoying as if this were proper behavior. Both the Sudra and the prostitute were drunk. The prostitute's eyes were rolling in intoxication, and her dress had become loose. Such was the condition in which Ajamila saw them. The Sudra, his arm decorated with turmeric powder, was embracing the prostitute. When Ajamila saw her, the dormant lusty desires in his heart awakened, and in illusion he fell under their control. As far as possible he patiently tried to remember the instructions of the sastras not even to see a woman. With the help of this knowledge and his intellect, he tried to control his lusty desires. But because of the force of Cupid within his heart, he failed to control his mind. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.1.56-62. Brahminical qualifications. The order carriers of Yamaraja, the Yamadutas, are explaining the factual position of piety and impiety, and how a living entity is entangled in this material world. Describing the history of Ajamila, the Yamadutas relate that in the beginning he was a learned scholar of the Vedic literature. He was well behaved, neat and clean, and very kind to everyone. In fact, he had all good qualities. In other words, he was a perfect Brahmana. A Brahmana is expected to be perfectly pious, to follow all the regulative principles, and to have all good qualities. The symptoms of piety are explained in these verses. Apparently, Ajamila followed the rules and regulations of celibacy as a perfect Brahmachari, and was very soft-hearted, truthful, clean and pure. How he fell down in spite of all these qualities, and thus came to be threatened with punishment by Amaraji is described here. Because Ajamila was born into a Brahmana family, he was naturally Sruta Sampanna. Sruta means that by hearing the Vedas, Ajamila was rich in Vedic knowledge. In India, Brahmanas are called Panditas, learned men. A Brahmana cannot be a fool and a rascal. Therefore, one who has no knowledge of the Vedas cannot be a Brahmana. Simply reading the Vedas from a scholastic viewpoint is useless. One must practically apply the knowledge of the Vedas. Armchair Vedantists smoke cigarettes while reading Vedanta, but that kind of study is useless. We have seen many so-called sannyasis talking on Vedanta, smoking all the while. Ajamila was not that type. He was a scholar of Vedic literature, and he was very well behaved. A Brahmana must study the Vedas under the guidance of a spiritual master, and after the purificatory process of Upanayana Samskara, he becomes Dvija, or twice born. At that time the sacred thread is offered to such a person. This is the sign by which we can understand a person has formally accepted a SPI, ritual master. It is a kind of badge. One who is not twice born is unqualified to understand the Vedas. It is not that, just because one happens to know a little Sanskrit, he becomes expert in Vedic knowledge. Many foreign scholars have translated the Vedas, but we do not accept their translations as bona fide, because a student of the Vedas must be Dvija. When a person has become truthful, able to control his mind and senses, clean, simple and tolerant, full of knowledge, and able to practically apply knowledge in life, and when he has full faith in God, Krishna, he is Dvija. Such a person can be said to have become a duly qualified Brahmana, and he is able to study and understand the Vedas. Ajamila was not only born in a Brahmana family, but he was qualified in Vedic knowledge. In his youth he studied the Vedas completely. He was silvan, very gentle. He was also sadakara, which means he observed the habit of keeping clean, and rising early in the morning, to attend Vedic temple ceremonies, such as Mangala Arati. He was a reservoir of good qualities. We too can be sadakara, if we practice devotional service regularly, including daily attendance at Mangala Arati, and chanting 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna mantra on beads. These practices will gradually cleanse us of material contamination. Upon accepting initiation from the spiritual master, one takes a vow to perform these spiritual activities daily. Even the six Gosvamis of Vrindavana, who were liberated personalities, regularly chanted the Maha Mantra many times daily, and they never failed to offer their obeisances to the deity and the devotees. Raghunatha Dasa Gosvami would offer obeisances flat on the ground, dandavats, many times daily. These activities indicate that the Gosvamis were Dratavrata, accustomed to taking vows with great determination, and carrying them out. Without practicing austerity and penance with firm determination, we cannot approach God. One who is serious about making spiritual advancement has to accept all these regulative principles. Ajamila possessed all Brahminical qualifications, and he knew all the necessary mantras, such as the Gayatri Mantra and the Hare Krishna Mata Mantra. Also, he was always rendering service to his guru. That is the first qualification of a Brahmana. In Vedic times, every high caste family performed a fire sacrifice in the morning, after taking a bath and chanting Vedic mantras. Agni, the sacrificial fire, was continually lit. They offered oblations to the fire, to the guru, and then to all the adult members of the family. Thus they daily offered respect to their father and mother, and to the spiritual master. Nowadays this is not done, but in the Vedic system this was the first business of the day. A good example of this practice of respecting elders is Yudhisthira Maharaja, the great saintly Pandava king. After the battle of Kurukshetra, Yudhisthira and his four brothers would go every day to offer their respects to their paternal uncle, Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra had contrived many plots to destroy the Pandavas, finally declaring war on them, but the result was that every one of his 100 sons died. Even after he lost the war, he still refused to welcome his nephews, the sons of his brother Pandu. This was a great insult to King Yudhisthira. One day Dhritarashtra's younger brother, Vidura, a great Vaisnava, went to Dhritarashtra and said, "My dear brother, you are so shameless that first you declare war against the Pandavas, and now that you are an old man, still you do not receive King Yudhisthira as your guest, yet you live in his house at his expense. Are you so shameless, my dear brother?" Vidura spoke in this way, just to help Dhritarashtra break his attachment to family life. Dhritarashtra was an old man and all his sons were dead, but still he sat in his household arrangement, eating nicely prepared food. From this we can understand that family attachment is very strong. Vidura chastised Dhritarashtra, "You are coughing up mucus because you are very old and your liver is weak. You will die very soon, yet you are still sitting in your comfortable chair, just like a dog. Have you no more shame than a dog, which always sits waiting for his master to feed him?" Upon hearing Vidura's harsh words, Dhritarashtra's hard heart softened, and he replied, "Yes. My dear brother Vidura, please let me know what I should do." Vidura said, "Come with me immediately to the forest. For the remaining days of your life, just engage yourself in Krishna consciousness. Come with me." So without telling anyone, Dhritarashtra left with Vidura, and Gandhari, Dhritarashtra's faithful wife, followed. Together they went to the forest, to finish their life in meditation on the Lord. When King Yudhisthira came to offer his obeisances in the morning, and saw that his uncles were not there, he became anxious, considering that Dhritarashtra was an old man. At that time the great sage Narada Muni appeared and informed him, "Do not worry. Dhritarashtra and his wife, Gandhari, have been brought to the forest by our uncle Vidura." This story from the Srimad Bhagavatam illustrates the system of offering respects to the elderly members of the family. After the morning's duties are performed, next one must go and offer obeisances to the spiritual master and the elderly persons in the family. One must also offer respects to a guest. Usually we know when a certain guest is coming to our home and can make preparations beforehand, but sometimes it happens that someone comes unexpectedly, and he too must be received with respect. And when it comes to eating, the head of the family should feed the older members first, then his children and other members of the family. He will eat last, and before he eats his food he should stand in the road and call out, "If anyone is hungry, please come. I still have not taken my food, and you are welcome." Some remnants of food should be kept at home in anticipation of unexpected guests. The Vedic principle is that when someone comes and begs, "Sir, I'm hungry," a man must give the hungry guest his own foe, odd even if he himself remains hungry. That is real grastha asrama. I have seen that a young man will not smoke in the presence of an old man without permission, even if they are strangers. So a young man will show consideration even to an older stranger, what to speak of his father or elder brother. In Vedic society, any older man is offered respect. These principles are not hard and fast, but this is Vedic custom.